Welcome to the Coconuts Podcast. Today is November 20th, 2020. The Coconuts Podcast is your home for top trending news and pop culture from all across Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. I'm Summer Lee.
And I'm Vim.
I'm Vim Shanmugam.
And I'm Summer Lee.
Woohoo!
Woo!
What's up, Summer? How are you?
Same, same. How are you?
Good, another cracking week of news. We actually have some juicy stuff today, this week. And we obviously have our special guest who is one of our editors who will be dishing on some drama that's been happening in, well, shall we say it now or shall we tease it somewhere across the region?
Somewhere.
If you don't read the title.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's a giveaway, right?
I mean, like, we'll just pretend that people don't read our titles. It's fine.
Fair enough. That's a good way to go about life. Mm-hmm. That's my MO.
Eyes closed. Just go in. Advertise with our in-house agency, Grove. Fast, funny, digital. Join forces with us to slay buzzwords, rise above the noise, and sow the seeds of something great. Get in touch via coconuts.co/grove. And now our top stories of the week. We start off in Bali where, sad news, an 11-year-old girl has died after eating pufferfish crackers in Bali. But yeah, so she has died from poisoning after eating crackers made out of pufferfish in Bali's Buleleng Regency, while a 5-year-old is being treated at the local hospital for the same reason. But yeah, in a statement issued by Buleleng Police, this representative said that the incident occurred when the older victim visited a younger victim and yeah, they both ate the crackers made out of pufferfish skin that was put inside a container. And about an hour later, both victims started vomiting and became weak and were later taken to the local community clinic. And both of them were moved to the local hospital where the older victim was treated before she was pronounced dead. And the younger victim is still conscious and is being treated still. So authorities suspect that the older victim died due to the poison tetrodotoxin, which is present inside the pufferfish and is deadly to humans. There is no known antidote to the poison. And though the fish is prepared as a delicacy in some countries, it's called fugu in Japan, it requires careful preparation in order to remove the toxic parts. And yeah, this also comes after like a case in 2006 where two children in the same area died hours after eating crackers made out of pufferfish as well. And yeah, it was suspected that the crackers were not prepared correctly and still contained the fish's deadly poison. Oof.
Yeah, this is a tough one. To be honest, like I didn't even know they had fugu fish crackers. I mean, for people who don't know, they kind of look like fish skin crackers of like any type of fish crackers that you would buy like in a grocery store. I guess like in a grocery store in Asia, but they look pretty mild and innocent, but obviously not.
Yeah, like even in Japan, like apparently to become a fugu chef, you got to go through training for like maybe 7 to 10 years to be able to prepare this fish and serve it to actual people. So, damn.
Yeah, I guess like I didn't even know that pufferfish were in the waters in Indonesia, near Indonesia. But yeah, I guess they're probably like in the tropics, right? So yeah, such sad news. And hopefully there are some restrictions or at least like some ways of monitoring how these fish are prepared and how they are turned into crackers or any other snacks, because I mean this is the second time and yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, and just pufferfish, they look so freaking cute, you know, when they're all puffed up. Damn it, you didn't think like it would be so deadly.
Cute but dangerous.
Mm-hmm. That's all I want to be in my life, to be honest.
You are, Summer. You are.
Thank you.
Well, over to Thailand, I have some kind of good news. Sort of good news.
Kind of, okay.
So Thailand is going to allow the medical use of cocaine, opium, and morphine. This obviously coming on the back of Thailand legalizing medical marijuana. So Thailand has ordered more than 100 drugs, including cocaine, morphine, and opium to be decriminalized. And so they can use that for medical and research use. Obviously you still can't use it for leisure, but it's a huge sort of announcement. the new regulations will come into effect in July 2021. A whole bunch of category 2 narcotics like cocaine, opium, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine will all be part of medical use and research use.
Yum, yum.
But yeah, like I said, like, you know, possession and leisure use is still illegal, but maybe these are, you know, good steps in, I wouldn't say legalizing these drugs, because obviously they're still crazy drugs. But yeah, I think in a way, I think it would help people in sort of more rural areas, potentially, like if they need to get medical help for really sort of severe ailments. So yeah, a good step forward, I think.
Yeah, man. And just decriminalizing like drugs in general.
Whew. Yeah. Use it at your own risk.
I mean, you know, not that we're encouraging it here on the Coconuts podcast, but like, you know, do you.
Do you. But not too much, you, and don't get arrested. And don't
And don't get us arrested, you know, just saying. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think that's more important. Don't get us arrested.
And over in Manila, shell or shoe? Netflix's The Crown makes fun of Imelda Marcos. Ooh, look who's having a moment in the spotlight. Yes, the former First Lady, Imelda Marcos, was mentioned in the third episode of the fourth season of the Netflix drama The Crown, which is based on the British royal family's lives. And in the I'm not going to do that.
Do it. I feel you should continue.
Okay. In the episode, Princess Margaret, who's played by Helena Bonham Carter, I love her, talks to her family about when she met Imelda during a visit to the Philippines.
Okay. I'm fine.
Oh, thank you. I've been practicing all my life for this. So anyway, in Manila, in the middle of a state banquet, who barges into the room? None other than Imelda Marcos. Margaret stood with a cigarette in one hand in the show. Wow, I'm killing it, by the way. And now I will carry on for the rest of the article. She makes a beeline straight for me, saying she's desperate to show me her. Wait for it, Margaret said. Shoe collection, interjected Princess Anne, who's played by Erin Doherty. Love her. Mm-hmm. Shell collection, Margaret corrected. An amused Prince Philip, played by Tobias Menzies, asked, are you sure she was probably just trying to say shoe and you misunderstood her? Did she have something in her teeth? Queen Elizabeth, played by Olivia Colman, joked. No, I can assure you it was seashells, Margaret replied. God.
On point. An amazing performance.
Thank you. I'll try my best every week for you all. A Twitter user said it was the character's way of making fun of Imelda's fake English accent. Wouldn't know what that's about, but yeah. Another Twitter user said, to be fair, one old rich family with an unfair accumulation of wealth making fun of another is the kind of irony I cannot take. But on the meta level, The Crown making a point. Yes, Imelda Marcos is a joke and a blight. All forms of dynasties often are. Wow. I love these. Best episode, best article.
This is hilarious. Yeah, I mean, first of all, Crown. The Crown is an amazing show. Highly recommended. Highly recommended. Yeah, but I thought it was kind of funny. I thought like all the netizens in the Philippines were going a little crazy as well. They were lapping it up. For people who don't know, obviously, like Imelda Marcos, former First Lady of the Philippines, was notorious for her gigantic shoe collection, and was also a bit of a, should I say, prima donna? Was that controversial? Was that controversial to say that? Or
no, it's okay.
I guess a very, I guess, not so loved first lady by her people. So yeah, I think a lot of the Filipinos enjoy those little jabs.
I'm just reading that the Marcos family's ill-gotten wealth is estimated at US $10 billion. And wow, only US $3.1 has been recovered in 30 years. Where is it? It's not in my pocket. Somebody should give me some, but that's just my opinion.
And I think anytime that we can get you, Summer, to slip into your British accent, that's always a win. That's a win.
Cast me for the next season. That's all I'm saying. That's all.
Well, unfortunately, from Manila, we go to something a little bit more serious in Hong Kong. Over 100 women have voiced sexual harassment complaints against a top Hong Kong athlete. Why does this keep on happening?
Jail!
Goodness gracious. Over 100 women say they were victims of sexual harassment at the hands of G. Kaman, a 36-year-old long-distance runner and running coach at a club he founded. He's quite a, I guess, kind of a famous-ish guy, like a fitness influencer to a certain extent. But yeah, G founded a running club in 2011 and attracted a whole bunch of students to his club. And unfortunately, some sneaky crap has come out. He recently had a post where he mocked a former student who said he attempted to lure her into his car after practice. Basically, she said he tried to lure her into his car after practice, which she obviously said no to. And then he came out and said, yeah, and he denied that, kind of making light of the situation. And obviously from that, a lot of other netizens like jumped out and started saying all these like crazy things that he actually made them do. One of them being that he took a runner on a long ride and basically told her that she should fall asleep because it was going to be a long ride. And when she awoke, he was groping her boobs. And then another instance was when after running practice, he grabbed a lady by her hands and tried to bite her nose. So as he's... Yeah, that's not even sexual. That's just like assault. Mm-hmm. But after all these accusations, he said that he reflected on his past behavior and felt that he seriously handled matters relating to his feelings in an inappropriate way. And he apologizes sincerely to everyone that he's hurt, which really was like neither here nor there. He didn't remark on the sexual assault accusations. And yeah, the case is kind of ongoing. The victims have approached an NGO called Rain Lily that supports sexual assault survivors for help. And yeah, they're in a way where, you know, they're trying to move this case forward and actually like take action against him. So the Me Too, obviously hashtag Me Too, as everyone knows, is something that, you know, is really trending again, unfortunately, in Hong Kong. So yeah, let's just hope that, you know, this sort of blame the victim attitude is condoned and there's some repercussions for this dude.
Yeah, dude, 100 women, like, again, for the record, fuck this guy. But at the same time, oh my God, 100 women, like, I don't care if you are a runner, so you cannot run away from this shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
jail.
Yeah, it's kind of an unfortunate thing because I think we talked about this, like, in Hong Kong just a few weeks ago that there were, you know, certain situations that are quite similar to this. And I think it's part of the culture as well, like, especially in Asia for some reason, where, you know, it's so patriarchal that, you know, women just can't come out and be honest and open. And, you know, if they do say something, there is this blame the victim attitude. Yeah. And, you know, gender equality is still kind of messed up severely in not only in Hong Kong, but just across Asia.
Yep, I'm rooting for this guy to go to jail.
He can't run from that.
Oh. And over in Bangkok. So Bangkok taxi passengers have to pay for baggage from now on.
Oof. No.
Yup. Like, as a person with a lot of baggage and like as a Singaporean that constantly goes to Bangkok. No. But yes, so you get charged for baggage when you hop onto a Bangkok taxi, and additional charges may apply on trips to and from airports. Oh my God, like, you just don't want us to go there. Is that it? Is that it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird, right? Like, I guess, like, yeah, I mean, times are tough, and, you know, this is probably trying to get more money from situations. So, situations in that are happening right now, like for domestic travelers.
Yep, yep. And yeah, charges of up to 100 baht, that's about $3 US, for each baggage item such as boxes, sports equipment, musical instruments, bikes, and luggage will be applied to a passenger riding in a Bangkok registered cab. Oof. But yeah, so smaller personal items such as purses, laptops, bags, backpacks are not included, as well as wheelchairs and other aids for people with disabilities, the elderly, and hospital patients. But yeah, if the stowed item is 50 inches or more in length or width, then passengers will have to fork out about 100 baht per item. So yeah, like, I guess taxis are new airplanes. We're just going to follow guidelines, get a smaller bag. Yeah. Maybe cabin size is good. Yeah.
Check-in size. Mm-hmm. What if you went to like a grocery store and you had a bunch of bags?
Yeah, man. Like they say, like 100 baht for a bag. So I guess if it's small, then you're good. But also, it's like, what if you have like 10,000? You know, instead of one giant bag, you have like 10 small bags, like just to screw with the system. How does that work?
I guess it does say that. Commuters can bring a maximum of two smaller items. So that's, I guess, like maybe bags, and then anything beyond that third bag onwards is like 20 baht and more. So. No.
What? I'm gonna get like three bags of Lay's, and I'm gonna be like, "What is that?" Because like they're kind of small, but there's like three bags. But I cannot merge all of them into one. Where's the science? And as we all know, the science potato chip bags are like half air. So like, I'm gonna bring all these arguments to court when I am charged.
That'll be hilarious. I mean, oh gosh, I guess it's just a sign of times where, you know, money needs to be made everywhere because everyone's kind of hurting.
Hmm.
Well, from Bangkok bags, we go to Singapore, where Changi Airport has set up some indoor glamping getaways. Oh, so obviously, yeah, you know, we can't go anywhere. So Changi Airport is basically like a ghost town. And for people who don't know, Jewel is sort of our jewel in Crown Jewel. Is that too corny?
Okay, we'll leave it in that corny.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, so we have like a gigantic waterfall, indoor waterfall at Jewel Changi Airport. And it's very scenic. There's a lot of greenery. It's like really beautiful. There's a whole bunch of floors. And they're saying now that you can glamcation in Changi Airport. The Glamcation in the Clouds experience will basically allow anyone who wants to be a part of it to stay potentially overnight if you want to. There'll be queen size beds, single size beds, pillows, air coolers, the whole nine yards, where you can kind of customize according to your needs and enjoy the scenic backdrop, some great food with your family. So it's a really fancy tent will be put up, and you can kind of book them according to your family or to couples. And really, it's kind of a really fancy thing. Everything still being done with social distancing. Weekend packages and their weekday packages as well. It does look like a cool way of making use of the space and bringing people in. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm not a big fan of camping. And I'm just wondering, because I assume that the tents are going to be in areas. If you want access to the beautiful waterfall, the tents are going to be in areas where people can kind of walk around. So are they saying that they're going to set up a tent and then you're going to be like asleep and people are walking around outside? Because the Jewel and the airport still close around 10:30. And if you're checking in and you have like a good evening out, that's going to be like from 6, 7 p.m. You're still going to be like people. There's still going to be people walking around. I feel like, I don't know. That might be kind of weird. I feel like if we're like in your jammies trying to sleep and there's like a whole bunch of people like trying to buy iPhones behind you.
Yeah. And what if you get up to go pee? Like that's in your jammies and you're going to walk through a crowd of people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other thing. Yeah. Because you still have to get up and then go to a bathroom. Right. And so do you like do the change? Is there a potter potty?
Do you shower? What is happening? And are the tents close to each other or like, yeah. And like, you know, the giant ass waterfall, right? It is not without noise. We are proud of it as the world's largest indoor waterfall or whatever. But like, that shit noisy. So like, am I just going to have to listen to water splashing outside for the whole night? Or what is happening?
Maybe it's therapeutic for some people. I don't know.
Oh, that's true. It's just me. I'm the light sleeper.
I don't know. I'm the same way. I can't. Yeah. If it's too noisy, I'm not going to be able to do anything. And yeah, so it's kind of, I guess, you know, to each his own. This is a good way of adapting. And there might be some cool things. And obviously there's also day packages where you don't have to stay overnight. Those might work a little bit better, but I also feel like it's kind of the same thing, right? Like you're just going to be doing things in your tent while people are walking around.
I love it. You know what? If you're at the Jewel anyway, like, and you really need a nap, why not get this?
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. If you can't fly, I guess sleeping at an airport is the closest thing.
For sure. And tell us how it is. Call us, text me any time of day and tell me how it is. Ooh, and over in Jakarta, spooky shit. There, Pocong goes international. Indonesian netizens are spooked by a ghost sighting in the hit K-drama series Startup. Yeah, many Indonesians have taken to binge-watching K-dramas to pass the time at home, with the new series Startup being one of the most popular dramas right now, as it is currently running and streaming worldwide on Netflix.
Well, I can't say I haven't watched it.
Same. Sorry, not my thing. Don't send us hate mail, I'm sorry! But yeah, starring idol-turned-actress Bae Suzy and Nam Joo Hyuk. Sorry if I'm saying all of that wrong. Please don't send us hate mail. Just kidding. But yeah, Startup airs new episodes every Saturday and Sunday, and the latest episode has turned into a hot topic among Indonesian netizens after they took to social media to report the apparent sighting of a familiar supernatural creature. Spooky. But yeah, in a scene from the 10th episode, Nam Do-san is staring at Seo Dalmi, who is sitting under a bus stop across from him, and what looks to be a pocong can be seen on top of the bus stop. And yeah, you should go see the video and tell us if there is a pocong, or, you know, somebody's airing their bed sheets to dry, or I don't know, man, tell me.
A pocong is like a Indonesian, like, Pontianak
zombie
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I guess for people who don't know. Yeah. Pontianak is like a vampire, like a woman, like a female vampire ghost. And then a pocong is a Indonesian zombie. So a walker.
Oh. But yeah, so a pocong is usually wrapped up from head to toe in white cloth, as is customary in Islamic burial rites, with only their faces uncovered. And with their lack of limb mobility, they hop around from place to place.
Oh,
but yeah,
dear.
I guess this pocong in particular, like, hopped overseas into Korea and right into this K-drama.
I feel like that would be kind of more freaky, right? Because I feel like Western zombies are either really slow and they walk, like, you know, really, like, lumbering, or they're, like, really, really fast. But jumping, I feel like it's kind of a more scary motion. It's something just hopping towards you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like this guy has no like limb mobility as mentioned, so it's like he's really coming for us. Like if he can like do transatlantic flights or you know whatever, like or what is this? Do you think it's a crossover? Maybe like then the next season it'll be a collaboration with maybe an Indonesian drama all about pocongs.
Or maybe it's like one of the zombies from like Train for Busan, like that has jumped over. It's like it's a whole universe, Summer. It's a whole universe.
Move aside, MCU. This is the PCU, is the Pocong Cinematic Universe.
In our next story, this happens in Malaysia. And I think this is an interesting story because I can relate to this. Sarawak firemen rescue ridiculously fat croc from a drain. A gargantuan crocodile was found lurking in a drain, couldn't escape in Limbang, Sarawak, and had to be hauled away by a forklift. This poor 800-kilogram crocodile was 15 feet long, and it was stuck in a drain. And all I got to say is that I think this croc is just like me. We had to go through lockdown. We put on some weight. It's okay. It's okay, bro. I still love you. The poor guy had to be forklifted out of the drain and is now safely in the Sarawak forestry to live in peace. The saltwater crocodile somehow found his way through the drain and got stuck. And it was reported to the Fire and Rescue Department of Malaysia, and they had to send people down. Six firemen came down with a forklift and brought the poor crocodile to safety. So netizens were a little intrigued by how did this happen? And how did such a plump creature get into the drain? Where was it going? And then obviously there were a lot of accolades and thank yous to the firemen who saved our favorite gigantic croc. So yeah, it's insane. That's like a huge, that's a huge crocodile. But I guess like, yeah, saltwater crocodiles do get like gigantic, right?
I have no idea, but like, I don't know. I would want to see one, and not in a longkang, but oh Lord, he thick. I am mesmerized by this photo. Please look at him. He is an absolute unit. I do not use that phrase lightly, but whew, you just got to see.
Yeah. There's about like 13,000, over 13,000 saltwater crocodiles in Sarawak. And yeah, apparently like a male saltwater crocodile can grow up to about 18 to 20 feet and weigh up to 1,000 kilograms. So it is a humongous, humongous like creature. And yeah, I'm glad, like, first of all, the dude's safe, but mm-hmm. also that everyone else was safe, because one chomp from this guy, he could like bite someone in half, like easy. And
dude could swallow me whole, like literally just look at him.
Yes. Yeah, you'd be an appetizer, Summer. You'd still come for more. So in our top story, there's been some shenanigans happening in Bali, where the beaches have been invaded by people. And to find out more, we're going to be talking to our managing editor in Bali, Shaney.
So hi, Shaney. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, you guys.
Hi.
Hi.
But yeah, how are things in Bali?
Oh, things are, you know, happening, I guess.
It seems that way, especially in these like Bali beaches that we're seeing.
We saw the news that a whole bunch of people headed to the Bali beaches, and it was basically like a free for all. Maybe. Please tell us more about that.
Okay, so some videos were taken and some photos were taken during the weekend, which showed like crowded beaches in Bali. And this stood out in particular because it was around that same time that Indonesia reported its highest daily tallies so far for COVID of over 5,000 cases. So I think like if you were looking at those videos, you would think that we were handling COVID really well in this country. But the truth is, we never even gotten over the first wave. So that was, I think, what made this particular site quite popular among our readers and also like on the internet.
Yeah, I'm still trying to make sense of it as well. So yeah, Shaney, could you tell us about the kind of health protocols in place in Bali currently?
Yeah, so there's a lot of health protocols. I feel like that's all they talk about, like officials. But again, these are mostly advisories. They're not actually that strictly implemented as well. So I think the strongest sanctions that we have in Bali is under this thing called a gubernatorial regulation. So that comes from the governor. And this includes like a $6 fine if you're not wearing masks in public. So the other thing is like probably the strongest part is just a threat of closure or having your permits revoked for businesses and facilities that don't implement health protocols or have like health precaution facilities, like the, you know, the places where you wash hands and all that stuff. But that's pretty much it. So and then under than that is just like, oh, you have to wear a mask. You have to get your temperatures checked before you enter certain premises and social distancing, I guess. But again, I just feel like in general, none of these are really that strictly implemented. And so Bali, like maybe you guys know, like, you know, they have a lot of like religious activities and stuff. And that really involves a lot of people. And there's been a cap at like how much people can, you know, join at a time. But I feel like those are the big ones in terms of safety measures. Oh,
wow. Is there anything specific to like beaches? Because I know there are like sort of people who kind of manage the space, right? Like that kind of walk around, ambassadors or you know, security. Is that
are they called ambassadors? Bitch ambassadors.
Well, we say ambassadors in Singapore. I think we have social distancing ambassadors who come in, like, who talk to you and be like, you are too close to someone else, wear your mask, you know, cover your face. But okay. in their defense, people tell me to cover my face in non-COVID times, so that's okay.
All right. Okay, that's actually, I just learned about that. That's kind of cool. I don't think there are ambassadors. There's like officers. So we have this thing called Public Order Agency. They're like an extension of the police, and they would usually be the one who is in charge of making sure that the rules are being implemented. So these are the people that I've also talked to when, you know, after the videos of those crowds came out, and I asked them, like, okay, so what happened? Was there like a difficulty in implementing, or did you not have enough officers and stuff? He was really diplomatic about it, of course. He was like, oh, the beach is really big, and we also have like cooperation with like the the beaches are managed by, I guess, their own management team. And so they kind of handle the task between them. And they only emphasize that they implement the rules at the entrance. So this is where visitors will have their temperatures checked, and, you know, to make sure that they're actually wearing masks, and then to be told, like, okay, be good, like, distance yourselves from one another. But you can see from those videos and photos that people are just like sitting next to one another, and nobody. And there's like, you can actually hear in one of the videos that there's a loudspeaker, which I thought was like really ironic, of like a man saying, oh, please keep your distance.
Kemudian menjaga jarak dan hindari kerumunan.
But it's like they're there and they're like right next to each other. And it's like, yeah, it's just like a food for all, I guess.
Am I right to say that largely like the people at these beaches right now are just Indonesians? Because only domestic travel... domestic travelers have been allowed to enter Bali, right?
Yeah. So most of them are Indonesians. And I think you can also tell from the videos. But I do think that like other places, like, you know, the serving spots are a little bit farther away too. And those are mostly where like the foreigners who stay in Bali would stay in. Like they would go, I mean, to the serving spots, or rather than the just... chill beaches, I guess.
Understood. Do you think that this is going to be like a common occurrence, like every weekend? I mean, that was just one weekend, right? And most of the beaches were in Seminyak and Sanur. Was that largely where the people were?
Yeah, those were largely where the people were. Those are pretty popular spots for, like, even pre-pandemic, that's where people would go, you know? And so I think, like, for a few months now, people have been going to these beaches, but I think the crowds were especially large last weekend. And it was like, it was something that, you know, kind of stuck out because of Indonesia's numbers lately. But the thing is, like, just in general, I feel like people have been kind of more, like, they are more careless than before in terms of, like, you're just going to wherever they want and not really observing social distancing. One thing I learned from officials is that, so they've been really good about wearing masks. Like the people have been wearing masks at all times. Like, so that's good, but they haven't really been good at social distancing. And I think that's one of the things that maybe, I don't know how authorities are going to try to make people be better at that, honestly.
Yeah, because it's been so many months. Like, I feel like, you know, if it hasn't been mandatory by now, like, if you said it now, I don't know if people would even care.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I feel like have been, like, we're in a limbo in Indonesia, I feel, not just in Bali, where we just, like, okay, so there are people who would follow what's being recommended by experts, but there are also people who are taking this, like, you know, okay, I don't believe that this is happening, because, you know, we still have those people. And it's like, okay, like, what do you want me to do? So they ask me, do you want me to stay at home and not, like, meet my friends? It's like, yeah, exactly, so we can get out of this more quickly. But no, they're not doing that, because, like, I think it's just like Bali is a really good snapshot of the craziness that's happening in Indonesia, I feel, just in terms of people not caring anymore, even though I think I mentioned this, we never got over our first wave, so.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, what do you think might happen because of this fiasco? Like, I don't know, what is the solution maybe? Because this guy with a loudhailer, should we give him 2 loudhailers or what is the solution?
I don't think so. I don't think anyone will be held accountable if that's kind of like what you're asking as well. I think it may be just like officials saying, oh, please don't do that. Like, because we've heard that before. Like, there's going to be something that went viral over the weekend. And then on Monday, like the task force would be like, oh, we heard that this happened. So please don't do that anymore. And it's like, okay, how are you really? Like, you're the government. But that's what's been happening. So I don't think it's going to really change from that pattern. Or at least maybe I'm too skeptical to believe that anything significant would take place. But yeah, I mean, I think it just comes down to hoping that those crowds won't turn into a new COVID cluster, you know?
Oh, yeah. Gosh. Yeah, I mean, Bali's already like been suffering more than, I guess, like as much as other like tourist destinations already. And, you know, if this keeps up, then all the news that we've been hearing, because we've been hearing a lot of, I guess, news changes every week. Like, you know, they might be opening up a little bit. They might be allowing international travelers in December potentially, or they're ready to allow international travelers. But then there might be like other protocols, and then this happens, and then it's all up in the air, like you said.
Yeah, I mean, like it's such a dilemma, right? Like Bali is the hardest hit economy in Indonesia. So like I understand also from like the official's point of view, like, okay, we want to get this tourism thing going, you know, because otherwise people are going to suffer more. But at the same time, I think like, I mean, experts have also said this, like you need to take care of the COVID situation first before you can sort of direct your attention on the economic side of things. And in terms of like opening to tourism for international, you know, travelers, I feel like, okay, that's a good idea. But then again, I mean, like not a good idea per se, but like if it happens when every other country is also doing it, that's fine. But the thing is like, it's not even happening internationally, right? No country is allowing that. So, I mean, like, I guess, I think you can travel out and into United States and that's fine, but they're also not handling things very well. So that's a good example.
Yeah, I think just a little bits here and there. I think there's some sort of, I don't want to say light at the end of the tunnel, but, you know, there's little openings here and there. But yeah, once again, like there's so many protocols in place that, you know, you might not even want to do it because it's such a hassle to go through it. So unless you're like, you know, rolling in it, you know, you might just want to stay at home. So that's kind of a bummer. So what do you think? I mean, it's hard to predict, like you said, but what do you think is going to happen with Bali and I guess in Indonesia in general in the next few months?
Ooh, okay. So next month is December. So the holidays are coming and that's always a big tourist draw for Bali, right? And as I said, like we've gotten to a point in Indonesia where a lot of people don't seem to care anymore. And we're seeing at the patterns of long weekends from like last month and the month before, people have been flocking to Bali whenever there's a chance to do that. And so I think that Bali is going to see a lot more domestic tourists next month, and we're probably going to be reporting on how's that going to affect like the COVID situation or whether like the beaches are going to be crowded and stuff like that. Yeah, and I think like when looking just from the lens of tourism in Bali, right, I think there's a lot of plans in the works right now, for such as like one of them is actually like opening like a special travel corridor with, I believe, well, the plan is with many countries, but one of the things that seem like it might be heading somewhere is one with South Korea, in which like two of the main airports in South Korea and also in Bali are working together to make sure that travelers can, you know, be safe upon. I think it's only for South Koreans to travel to Bali. I'm not really sure. It's still in the works, but that's something that might become something more. I don't know. But also, like, there's also in Indonesia, I think the question of whether we're going to be administering vaccines soon, because the plan, like the president wanted vaccines to be administered in December. That was like the plan before, but that did not get authorized by the relevant agency that's working on this. So that's going to be postponed. But it might be likely that we're going to be seeing that in early 2021. Who knows? I don't know.
So just like the rest of the world, Bali is in limbo.
Exactly.
I think that's about it.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Thank you, Shani.
Thanks, Shani, for all the interesting news.
All right. I hope that was okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, Samari, I mean, I guess as much as Shani wanted to give us more news, more detailed news, like she's also in limbo, like Bali and Indonesia and the rest of the world.
Life.
But I'm really kind of surprised that they didn't have like a lockdown or make a lot of things like really mandatory and go through a period, which I think has given me more appreciation for what we were kind of quote-unquote forced to do in Singapore. Because, I think it does help sort of stem the flow, if you may. But then again, Indonesia is so big. It's such a big country that, you know, I think even if they tried to do that, like, they wouldn't be able to do it.
It's like, how do you even begin? And, like, with which district? Like, where do you start? Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I guess in a way, you know, Singapore's size kind of was highly important in it. So, well, that's all for this week. Next week, we'll have another great guest, another great catch up, and a whole bunch of hopefully positive news.
Woo-hoo.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to support Coconuts and our weird and wondrous stories, you can become a Coco Plus member at coconuts.co/membership. Make a patron payment at coconuts.co/patron or buy our fresh merch at the Coconut Shop at shop.coconuts.co. Subscribe to the podcast and leave reviews. Tell us how you feel and what you like and don't like. We're excited to hear from you.
The Coconuts Podcast delivers impactful, weird, and wondrous reporting by our journalists on the ground in 8 cities: Singapore, Bangkok, Hong Kong, Manila, Jakarta, Kuala Lumpur, Yangon, and Bali. Listen to headline news and insightful interviews on matters large and small, designed for people located in or curious about Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. The Coconuts Podcast is a Coconuts Media production. Our hosts are Summer Lee and Vim Shamugam. Our executive producer is Byron Perry. Our production manager is Clarissa Cortez, and our editor is Raina Lim. Yeet!
Noise!